This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Thursday. Yes, it's Thursday already, January 28th, 2021. Michael K., Don LaGreca's back. Peter Rosenberg, we're together virtually for the next 3.5 hours. The other 20 and a half are your responsibility. Why only 3.5? 6:30 Ranger pregame show.
Right.
And before we start with the proceedings, the most important thing is we're thrilled Don is back. Everybody missed him. Are you feeling okay, Don?
Yes. I went to bed about 4 in the afternoon, and I woke up
a new man.
What was it, about 9 o'clock? The next morning, and wouldn't say I'm a new man, but I feel much better. So I don't know whether it's something I ate or whatever, but it really, really, really was a problem the night before, so I didn't sleep at all, and it just really conked me out. And so we had our pre-show meeting. You guys could see that I was looking like grim death.
So I had never seen it before.
I want to thank Tim. I want to thank Ryan, who pestered all day, make sure I was okay. Ryan was calling and to talk to Nancy when I was sleeping, make sure that I was okay. Everybody reaching out, people on Twitter, thank you. Because I never miss.
No.
I got scolded by Tim today, our general manager. He's like, no, you take off. If you don't feel well, you take off.
It's okay.
And I'm like, I know you want to be the hero, but you take off. Like, he just kind of talked to me like a dad. Like, listen, this is important, but it's not more important than your family and your health, so get better. So I really appreciated that. That's where I really feel like we're a family.
Beautiful.
Because when I passed out and I woke up and text from Michael and Peter and Anthony and Andrew and everybody, it was just really.
Well, because you looked, terrific. in a word, you looked troubling.
Yeah.
And I've got to tell you, I'm glad you got rest because Peter and I need rest now. Picking up that 70% is a big load. It was not easy.
No wonder you're tired. You're doing a lot of work every day.
You do a lot of work.
I never talked on the show that much.
I'm sure it was fine.
Now,
what are you cutting on your suit as you speak?
This beautiful sport coat. It's a beautiful John Varvatos sport coat. And I realized I'd never worn it before. And it had one of those tags, dug in. And when I tried to pull it out, I have little strings left. So I've been trying to get it right. But, Don, I want you to know that while you were gone, to make us feel better because we missed you, we played the Sniff 'Em Dead remix a couple times, and it really helped.
It did. It resonated with the people.
And I saw Chris Carlin reacted to it in a very interesting way.
Yes, very interesting. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
we just spoke in the soft open about something that could end up being troubling with Steve Cohen, the owner of the Mets, engaging with Dave Portnoy, who is, what is he, the president of Barstool Sports?
Mm-hmm.
And, he's done some good work with the Barstool Fund for restaurants and stuff like that. But he's also, I guess, a day trader that he used the Robinhood app. And because of what's going on with the shorting of stocks, and, it looks like the little guy is winning in the stock market against the big billionaires because they outsmarted them with the, with the group on Reddit. Robinhood will not allow you to buy stocks. They will only allow you to sell stocks. And that was the whole thing that Robinhood was built on. So Portnoy put out that, these people, he listed the names, including Steve Cohen, the owner of the Mets, should all be going to jail for what they've done. And Cohen said, what did I do wrong? I mean, Steve Cohen of $16 billion fame asked, what did I do wrong? Let's take this offline. And then Portnoy on Twitter goes, no, I'm not going offline. That's where shady stuff happens with guys like you. So then Cohen engaged him online. Can you imagine Hal Steinbrenner or John Mara doing that? Anybody who owns a team in New York, even Jim Dolan wouldn't do that. It's amazing. So if I was Steve Cohen, and there's no knock on Portnoy at all, step easy, man. If you're going to get into the feuds with people on Twitter, or get interviewed, so to speak, on Twitter, you're going to get into a lot of problems because people are going to hurt your feelings what they say on Twitter. And Steve Cohen, his life up to this point has been in the shadows, operating in the shadows, in anonymity. Nobody knew about Steve Cohen. Nobody knew what he was about. Now he's put himself out there as the owner of the Mets, and maybe he wanted this. But with that out front, you are going to be questioned. You are going to get the slings and arrows. And he's had a very long honeymoon period. Mm-hmm. Net fans love him, and they should. He's re-energized the franchise. He's put money into it. But you are going to get people that don't like you and are going to say nasty things. Yeah. And this is coming from somebody who has translucent skin. You're not going to win the fight. You're not going to win the fight, especially on social media.
And what a lot of people, you know, intellectuals, you know, people that make a lot of money, you know, that have had a lot of success in their life. In the real world, you might be able to debate your way out of a situation, argue your way out of a situation, present the facts, and win the argument. In social media, there is no winning. Because the people that are going to be for you are for you no matter what, and the people that are against you no matter what. So if you get into a hissing match with a Portnoy type of guy, you know what? His followers, the people that love Barstool, that love him, you're not going to win an argument against them because they're going to support their guy. And the Met fan or the guy that doesn't like Dave Portnoy or the guy that loves Steve Cohen and what he's going to mean to the Mets, they'll love him and they'll support him blindly. So I think that's what he has to realize is that you're arguing until you're blue in the face. You're not winning anybody over. All right? This isn't some debate where at the end there's a winner and a loser. You know, the battle lines have already been drawn. And very seldom are you get people to swing to your side.
And after this engagement, Don, Portnoy tweeted out like 40 minutes ago, and Met fans didn't like the Wilpons. And then he had a crying, laughing emoji. This is a down and dirty app, Twitter. It is. And it's hard to get the last word, especially with somebody as smart and clever as Dave Portnoy. It's going to be hard to get the last word.
And he's mastered how to use it to his favor.
Yes, so he's really good at it.
You trying to have some, you know, back and forth with him and think you'll get to a conclusion you want to get to, good luck. I mean, I've said a lot of things, not positive things about Dave Portnoy. He is not stupid on social media. He knows exactly what he's doing.
Absolutely.
But you know
Absolutely.
The old school debate, right, with Will Ferrell? Yeah, your opponent's never going to go, no. Everything you said is perfect. You know, I'm done. It doesn't work that way. There's no winning.
No.
There's no scorekeeping. Everybody is just going to get entrenched on the side that they want to be on, and you can't win.
Well, Peter, I'm sure that you'll be monitoring if they keep going back and forth, but we'll move on to other things right now, specifically the thing that's the most important thing to Jet fans, and that is Deshaun Watson has officially requested a trade from the Houston Texans. Now, last week, a very respected Miami writer, Armando Salguero, I think is the way you pronounce his last name, Salguero, reported that the Jets were Watson's first choice. Well, when Adam Schefter was on with Greeny a while back, he said, don't get your hopes up. And now that Watson has officially requested a trade, Schefter was on with Greeny again, and you could hear Greeny from 10 to 12 every day here on this station. And Greeny and Schefter went back and forth on Watson to the Jets possibly happening. Here's the exchange.
When this first came up with the Jets, I said, send them every draft pick you have, the entire roster, and the Chrysler building if you have to throw that in to try and get him, which does bring me to my very quick self-serving question. A week ago, with regard to the Jets and Watson, you said to me, and I quote, don't get your hopes up. Does that still apply?
I believe that still applies, Reese. Yes, right now, yes. I do believe that still applies. If I were you, I would not have my hopes up.
So talk about hopes crashing down. I mean, there was a guy in Miami, again, who's not some nobody, who said that the Jets were his first choice. So now Greeny goes to Schefter, and Schefter's about as locked in as you could be. People tell Schefter things. He's not where he is by accident. And for him to say, don't get your hopes up, there's got to be something there. Now, let's just say it's something as simple as this, guys. He looks at the rosters of teams, Watson does, and goes, I'm going to go from the Texans, who are 4-11-1, despite me having a great year. Then I'm going to go to the Jets, who have very little in the talent bin. And in order to get me, they're going to have to trade almost their entire draft arsenal. How are we going to get better? How? He might look around at other teams and go, they've got a better chance to get me and still be good. Because Miami had a pretty good year this year. And they've got draft capital. In fact, they have the number 3 pick in the draft, which came from, wait for it, Houston. in the Tunsil deal. So Schefter was then asked by Greeny, who would trade for Watson? Who's in on the Watson?
Sky's the limit, because I think there are 25 teams in the league that would be making an offer on the guy. 25. I think Jacksonville wouldn't. I think Kansas City wouldn't. I think Buffalo wouldn't. I don't think Green Bay would. And short of that, who else wouldn't? Baltimore? That's it. Just for fun. If you're Baltimore, why would you? Hey, we'll give you Lamar Jackson for Deshaun Watson. David Culley knows Lamar well. That's an example of what we're talking about, right? Lamar Jackson's a former MVP, and I'm not telling you Baltimore's going to. But for a moment, isn't that worth, like, would you do that if you were Baltimore? Like, right?
I guess you would do it if you were Baltimore. Watson's a better quarterback.
Right.
And you could sell to Houston. We're sending you an MVP. But it kind of stinks that the Jets aren't in on it.
But you're right. It might just be as simple as I just had a 4-5 win season.
Yeah. By the way, they're 4-12. I said 4-11-1. I apologize.
They've got some draft picks. They've got some free agent money. But the likelihood of them winning right away is probably slim, so I got to go another year of missing the playoffs in hopes that this general manager who's in his third year and this head coach who I like but is only hasn't even coached in the NFL on the head coaching level is the right choice. You know, I don't want to be 3 years from now in a situation that's worse than I was in Houston. I want to go someplace that Miami, I think they're ready to make the playoffs with him. Chicago, I think they're ready to make the playoffs with him. San Francisco, they're 2 years removed from going to a Super Bowl. Really, just a year removed from going to a Super Bowl. So, from a football standpoint, the Jets might be in the best situation to give Houston the biggest package. But of all the teams, that's probably the least likely place to go if you want to win right away, right?
You're starting from the bottom. I mean, it's do you feel like an entire rebuild? Helps that you have the left tackle. Helps that you have this head coach who seems incredibly appealing and seems to be a player's coach. But there's not a lot there to get excited about.
Now, here's the deal with Houston, according to Schefter. They just want this all to end.
Do you think the Houston Texans want to be a pinata for the next 2 months and get pasted every single day publicly? Do you think that they want this to go on and challenge a man as principled with as high a character as Deshaun Watson? See, this is the problem for the Houston Texans. It's no win, whatever direction they choose. They can call their quarterback's bluffing. I don't think he's bluffing. And say, no problem, you want to be traded. You're not going to show up. We're going to go on without you. And have that hang over their franchise, lose a transcendent talent, get nothing back in return, and have that situation linger.
You know what's happened here? And Don knows I've been saying this for years. Every time you give in to players that demand trades, you are furthering the blueprint for other players to do it. And I think that the NFL stars, particularly the quarterbacks, now see exactly how their NBA brethren do it. And the thing that has to happen from now on, this guy signed a massive 4-year extension worth about $40 million a year. It kicks in next year. Massive. Then he decides he wants to be traded. Well, in the next collective bargaining agreement, if you demand to be traded, your contract is void. Now, that could end up working out for Deshaun Watson because he might get more than that on the open market. But you can't take the money from a team and then demand that they trade you. That's not right. I believe, yeah, they would have it hanging over them. But if one team, one big team, took a stand and said, no, this is not happening. We are not trading you. Is he going to sit out for the rest of his life? Really? Is he going to sit out for the rest of his life? But as long as you continue to acquiesce, it will continue to be done. Now, I don't know if minor players could do it, but quarterbacks could do it. Defensive ends can do it. Probably big-time left tackles could do it. All the guys that are great, that there's nobody that's better than them. Aaron Donald could do it. J.J. Watt could do it. Teams have no leverage. If you continue to give in, they will never, ever have leverage. And the first time the guy gets a little bug up his butt, he's going to say, I want to be traded. And I don't know what the deal is with Watson. He might have a legitimate reason for wanting to be traded. And the Texans look like they're absolutely dysfunctional. But he knew that when he took the extension. And now I want to be traded, and you've got to do it. You've got to completely ravage your franchise by trading one of the top five quarterbacks in all of football. There's got to be another way. So they hire a coach out of Baltimore, which I don't, I mean, I've never heard his name in terms of being a coaching candidate. 65 years old. They give him the job, but they could have given the job to Deshaun Watson's brother, and I don't think he would stay because he knows he has the leverage. He looked at James Harden. He looked at all of the guys that do it this way and get their way. And I think they watch the NBA. They went to school on it. And they said, we could do this too. And they are. They are. And the NBA teams are helpless. And that's for the first time, Don, because the NBA teams always said there's no guaranteed contracts, whatever the case may be. Now the players have figured out we've got the power. And it's going to be an awful, awful time because you can't root for players anymore. Even if they're signed to long-term deals, they could just wake up one day and go, I want to be gone. That's why Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Bucks thing, now we could breathe for 5 years. He just signed a 5-year extension. He could wake up tomorrow and go, I want out.
Right.
The money, the contract means nothing. I want out. Well, we can't upset him, and then the other players would understand. They have all the power now, Don. All the power.
Well, that hasn't been the case in the NFL.
Yep.
We have seen certain situations. We saw what happened with Lev Bell. We saw what happened with in Jacksonville with Jalen Ramsey. But there have been players that have used that power play to get out. But for the most part, it's been very few and far between. And the big difference is in the NBA, you can pull a Harden and come into camp overweight and sacrifice a training camp and maybe a few games before you get yourself going again. And maybe you could sit out an entire year in the NBA and jump back in and not miss a beat. But you see in the NFL, can you really afford to sacrifice an entire season when you can zig instead of zag and it can all be over?
Right.
You know, are you willing to do that? You know, and if you are to mess around and miss training camp, you're really hurting the season because if it takes you 3-4 games to get ready, that could cost your team and your teammates a chance to win. We saw Lev Bell has not been the same player since holding out that whole entire year, right? And so I don't think it's as easy to do in the NFL. I think Watson is a very different set of circumstances, and I think this goes well beyond football. I do. You know, I can't definitively tell you what it is. I can speculate about it. But I think what makes this unique is he's a quarterback. He's a great quarterback. And there is something that he just does not want to ever have to deal with this team again. This goes beyond just not being very good.
Now, you know, we told you what Schefter said to Greeny. Don't get your hopes up. Well, John McClane, not of Die Hard fame.
Right.
He's like the guy in media in Houston. He has covered the NFL in Houston for 40 years. And he wrote a story for NFL.com. He said there's only one team that could trade for Deshaun Watson, and that's the Jets. Now, that's kind of runs counter to what Shefty's saying, but he's saying there's only one team that could trade for him. But is that the team that he wants to go to?
Right.
So there's only one team that has the draft collateral to trade for. Maybe that's what McClain's saying. Maybe McClain doesn't know that Watson doesn't want to go to the Jets. But why would the guy in Miami say with such certitude that the Jets are where he wants to go, and then Schefter say with such certitude, don't get your hopes up?
Well, is that what McClain is saying, that that's where he wants to go? Or is McClain just stating the obvious that the Jets can give Houston the biggest haul? Because he's right. Nobody else can give you the second overall pick in the draft. But if he doesn't want to come to the Jets, then it's moot. He's got a no-trade clause. He can't go to the Jets. Doesn't matter what the Jets offer. They can offer the entire franchise. If he doesn't want to go there, the deal's going to get nixed. So what is he actually telling us? Does he believe that Watson will go there? Or is it just, hey, the best package can go from the Jets? And maybe Deshaun hates Houston so much, he doesn't want him to benefit from the deal. I want to go someplace where I got a chance to win, and I'm going to really stick it to Houston, and I'm going to go someplace where they get the littlest haul back so that I can really stick it to them. Like, is there that much hatred?
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know either, but you know, is that going to be the case? Or he just, I'll go to Chicago because they've got the lowest draft pick. I don't know. But, you know, Schefter's never betrayed me before, so what is it that he wants out of Houston and doesn't want to go to the Jets? Jets got cap space. Jets have picks. Apparently, Sala is somebody he wants to play for. So what am I left to think, Michael? What am I left to think? And the one thing that I'm left it with is it political? Is Woody Johnson's affiliation with Trump going to kill the Jets' chances of getting this player? I don't know, but how do you not include that in a list of things, Michael?
I can't figure it out, and it just seems unusual to me that respected reporters are saying that that's his first choice, and then the most powerful reporter in the country, Adam Schefter, said, don't get your hopes. So, I mean, this, we're going to have Rich Samini on a little bit later on. Maybe he could give us some clarity, but it's a little bit odd.
Rich says the same thing. So there's enough people that I trust in Rich Samini and Adam Schefter that says that the Jets are not number one on his list. There's some because reports that Miami's not number two on his list.
If it's as simple as the Jets stink, why wouldn't we just know that?
I don't know.
Like now, Schefter, he said, you know, he's not willing to go to the Jets. They just have too much work to do.
Yeah, that's a great point, Peter. If that's the reason, why wouldn't that be able to be reported? I think
he hasn't spoken to anybody. That's why. I mean, he hasn't said anything. Maybe he's through back channels, but he has not been quoted as saying anything. It's only now become official that he officially asked the Texans. He supposedly did a couple weeks ago, and it just got out today. Now, Schefter also tweeted that Houston does have leverage if used. They could fine Watson $95,877 for missing minicamp. Big yawn. You could fine him $50,000 per day for each day of training camp missed, plus 1 week's salary, $620,000 for each preseason game missed. And if he retires, Texans could collect $21.6 million. I tell you what, because he's so important, I might play hardball.
Well, certainly if it means trading him is going to really hurt my franchise, what I can get back.
Right.
You know, like he only wants to go to a place and the team – see, that's where Watson can kill him. Right now, he's got a no-trade clause, right? What if he says, these three teams are the only places I want to go?
Yeah, you're handcuffing the team.
Or, here's the one place I want to go. And that one place is going to say, well, why do I have to give you a bunch? What am I doing? I'm competing against nobody. See, that would be the fear if I'm Houston, is that you talk about, they have leverage now, but what leverage would they have if he narrowed his selection down to one place? I want to go to Chicago. That's all I want to do. I want to go to Chicago. And the Bears will be like, all right, well, I'm not even going to give you a first-round pick.
Right. That's when you have to say, I'm not trading you.
Right.
Michael Kasha on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Inside the Huddle, the giveaway, when we get back, we'll take your phone calls as well. A lot of people want to talk about this. You know the number by now, 1-800-919-3776. It's Kay. Thank goodness LaGreca's back. Rosenberg and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, okay. Okay, okay. I like this beat right here. Let me drop. Tied down, letting the sun in of the 110. Chopper in hands that I make a lung spin.
Now, what is this, Anthony?
Michael, mind your manners.
What is it, Ant? Peter, what is this?
Michael, this will be the sound of my new single titled Marcus Smart by your favorite artist, Flea Lord and Stove God Cooks.
Wow.
What'd you think, Don, how did it hit? Did it hit different for you?
I'm not sure.
You don't know how it hit?
I don't hate it. I'll say that. I don't hate it.
But you don't know if it hit different or similar.
I think it potentially could. I just wasn't expecting it.
Got it. Okay. No, for sure. For sure.
Zumo and Flea Lord and Stovetop Cooks.
Now, I just got a direct message from a friend of mine who works in the Houston market. And he said there are people that are connected to the Texans and Deshaun that Watson's marketing agent, Brian Burney, is pushing the Jets as a trade destination to Watson for the endorsement opportunities, being the face of his own team and the respect they have for Saleh. And Bruni is a Brooklyn native, for what it's worth. So you have that. Now, this is also somewhat interesting. This is from SportTrack, who... really, they know contracts like no one else. And they said, with the Texans having already paid out his $27 million signing bonus, and with 3 years, $82.5 million guaranteed remaining, Deshaun Watson is now essentially a $27.5 million per year quarterback for his next team, a veritable steal for contenders looking to upgrade the most important position in sports. Let me ask you this. This will be really out there. If you demand to be traded, what if the Texans say, well, give us back the $27 million signing bonus? We got nothing out of it. Would he do that? Or he'd say, no, that's my money. Well, they gave you that money thinking that you were going to be there. That's amortized the cost of the contract. Right? I mean, it's only fair. You want out. They already gave you that money up front. Give the money back. 98.7, ESPN and Jack Daniels present Inside the Huddle on Friday, February 5th. It's an intimate gathering, Peter, with Bart Scott and Chris Canty. And it's hosted by the great Bob Weaselshusen. It's a VIP Zoom party on the Friday before the big game. The former NFL stars will break down the matchup, mix up some Jack Daniels cocktails, and give away some great prizes. Now, to score your VIP access pass and a Jack Daniels tailgating kit, be caller number 7 right now at 888-987-ESPN. Again, that's caller number 7 right now at 888-987-3776. It's 98.7 ESPN's Inside the Huddle, presented by Jack Daniels. The biggest game deserves whiskey's biggest name. Jack Daniels, make it count. All right, let's go to the phones. We have to go to Ira in Staten Island. Ira, how are you feeling about all this?
Hey, what's happening, Michael? How are you? Don, I'm glad you're feeling better. And Peter,
thank you.
I hope everything's okay. We're watching here. Listen, it's like unprecedented that a top five quarterback, arguably, hits the open market because he's forcing a trade. And I get it. It's like it looks like the NFL with some of these premier players want to make it like the NBA. But you know what? It's the new world we're living in. It's the new athletes we're living in. Quite frankly, I don't think Joe Douglas is in his DNA to start giving away 3-4 draft picks to get a quarterback. But with that said, I would, because I've been waiting for a star quarterback, and I know Don's going to disagree because of statistics, since Namath. Chad was really nice. Vinny was nice. But it's been 50-plus years since they've had a top-five quarterback. You could make it happen, and you could still be sharp enough as a GM where if you have to give away some premium draft choices, you have enough capital in the cap room and building a draft between rounds 2 and 5 where you could still formulate and build a team to surround Watson with competent players so you could be a very competitive team. And I think that's the direction they should go.
I don't even think it's an argument, guys, right? I mean, the Jets should trade for him. Done. Question is, will he want to come here? I don't think there's any question that you trade for him, right? Zero. Got to get him.
I mean,
if
there
the
might
option's
be too
there,
much.
You have to.
There might be a point where it's too much.
Well, I mean, obviously there's going to have to be a point of no return, but, you know, right now I think to be involved in this thing, giving up 3-4 picks, you know, possible first-round picks, in a year where you have 2 first-round picks this year, yeah, I think you have to do it. But to me, if he's not a Jet, it's not going to be because the Jets weren't interested. It's not because of the Jets just weren't willing to make the deal. It's going to be because he didn't want to play here.
Let's go to Terrence in West Orange. Terrence. Hey, Terrence.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, it's actually Terrence in East Orange.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know what? I read it wrong. My apologies, Terrence.
No problem. My whole thing, I was calling to say, Kay, like, you guys go against Deshaun Watson talking about why is he going or wanted to man a trade after he signed a contract. But it's okay when the teams and the organizations, they don't honor the contract and they want to take money back if you have a bad year and if they want to
But they are honoring the contract.
Yeah, Terrence, they are honoring the contract. If a player has a guaranteed contract, they can't take money away. And if a player has a no-trade clause, they can't trade him.
Right.
So they are honoring the contract. But Watson's not honoring his contract. That's about he's not. He signed to play with the Houston Texans. Now he wants to go.
Right.
I know what you're saying. Players are mistreated in the NFL.
That's what I'm saying, right. On a normal basis, if a player have three less sacks this year, hey, listen, Bobby Joe Smith, we want to take some of that money back. Or if a player ain't live up to the year before, hey, let's just trade him all the way across the country. So a lot of times, yes, the organizations don't honor the contract.
But no, no, but Terrence, so
I'm with the players.
But I'm with the players most of the time too. But Terrence, the one thing you have wrong, they are honoring the contract. They can't do that if the money's guaranteed. So the big stars get money guaranteed. So if you have a bad year, they can't take your money away.
Right.
And if you have a no-trade clause, they can't trade you. So if you have that kind of power, teams are not going to mess with you. They can't. They're legally bound not to mess with you. But Watson gets a $27 million signing bonus and then all of a sudden decides, I don't want to be here, and that's going to rupture the entire Houston Texans organization. They'll be a laughingstock.
Hey.
They lost one of the best quarterbacks in football.
And I'm sorry, we've talked about this ad nauseum, but a lot of people don't seem to get it. All right? They make it seem like the players have no leverage. They make it seem like the players are completely being taken advantage of. Do you realize I've talked to players? I've talked to people that have been involved with the union. Making contracts guaranteed, Michael, is not even in the top five of things they ask for when they get to the CBA.
Right.
All right? So stop it. If it's that big of an issue, then get together, strike, whatever you got to do to make sure during those CBA negotiations that your contracts are guaranteed. But when they get to the table, it's just not important enough for them to fight for it. It's not. There's other things that they need, a bigger piece of the pie, making sure they're taken care of after their career is over. All those things are very important. But you can't sit there and make it number one when you're not getting your way and saying we're being taken advantage of, and that when the CBA rolls around and it's time to renegotiate, it's not even in your top five things that you want. So what's the deal?
I think there's something that could be getting lost in translation, because I understand the way a lot of the callers feel. I side with the players. I don't care about the owners, and I don't particularly feel bad for them. I don't think Michael and Don do either. I think what, Michael, you're saying is you're talking specifically about honoring the legal agreement that you're entering into. It's not about the players being good or the owners being good and the players being bad. In fact, more often than not, you probably see it as the opposite. However, when you sign the deal, are you living up to the actual words on the contract, or are you changing your mind because now you don't want to be there?
You know, it's interesting you brought – I have more respect for James Harden than I do for Watson in this case, because Harden was offered – I think a 2-year extension at $45 million a year by the Rockets. And he still has 2 years left on his contract. He's offered another 2 years at $90 million, and he said no thanks. He could have taken that and then still pulled the move. Instead, Watson took all the money, took the contract, and then said he didn't want to be there. Now, on the flip side, I'd love to talk to McNair, the owner, and go, this is your franchise, clown. This is the guy. He makes suggestions to you who to, like, talk to about the GM position, and you ignore him? Now, I know you own the team, but it's a partnership. You don't think Jeannie Buss confers with LeBron James about things? You don't think the owners of the Bucks confer with Antetokounmpo about things? To ignore him, you brought this on yourself. So there are no innocent parties in this.
Right.
That was dumb on your part. You involve him so he can tell you who he likes, and you don't even interview those people. Shame on you. But shame on Watson for signing a contract that now he wants to be somewhere else to earn the money. So here's what he did. I'm going to take the guaranteed money. Then I'll ask to be traded rather than risk playing this year and getting hurt and then ask to be traded. No, no, no. He went the other way. I'll take the money and then demand to be traded. Is there honor in that? I don't know. Now, maybe there's stuff behind the scenes I don't know. And if there is, I'll step back and say I was wrong. But until he articulates that stuff, to me, he is going back on his word.
But let's be honest, Michael. He's not doing this because he doesn't have a guaranteed contract. He got a ton of money guaranteed in bonuses. But he's doing this because he wants out of Houston. And if he doesn't play, he's violating his contract. If an NFL owner decides, I'm going to cut Deshaun Watson because he's been awful the last couple of years, even though he's got more years left on his contract, whether you like that or not, technically, the owner is not violating the contract.
Right.
And if you want to change that, then the players got to get together. And we've seen it in baseball. When players get together and they work hard, they can win a lot of these CBA negotiations. But they don't have a history of really standing very strong. Why? Because their careers are so short. And they don't want to sacrifice and have a season not be played. So, and that's why you don't see a lot of players pulling what Deshaun Watson's pulling, because the fact remains is that is he willing to sacrifice a season when he might only have a couple of seasons left, depending on what happens with injury.
Rich Cimini has more on this. He's covered the Jets forever. He'll join us in just a moment, so stick around for that. The Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg, Cimini's coming up as well right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Split the ice apart and break the frozen
ice picks. Ice picks.
14 games tonight, so I felt obligated to come up with a pick. It was tough because there's not a lot of value out there, but I did see Islanders Capitals over under a 5.5.
You love it.
The over at +110. I'm going to go over. So much better to root for goals than you're getting. So I will take the over. 5.5 in Caps Islanders tonight.
Now, your last ice pick you gave was a big winner.
Yes, at +170, so you're welcome. And I got to say, everybody was very appreciative on Twitter.
Well, you made the money. People like when you make the money.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like it makes you like the anti-RJ Bell.
Sorry.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to a Paul in White Plains. Paul?
Yes, Michael. I've been a Yankee fan since 1956. And I'm looking at the rotation going into spring training, and to me, it looks like the worst rotation I have ever seen.
Wow.
After Cole, you've got more guys that have been in the operating room than they've been on the field. Am I wrong?
Well, it's a rotation with high upside, and also it could be terrible if they're hurt again.
But this is the New York Yankees. The idea that we're going to start the training with guys that have upside and huge downside.
Well, how about the young pitchers
understand.
They have?
Well, then make the young pitchers.
If you've been a Yankee fan forever, they're not going over 210. So as long as you're paying Stanton $30 million and $36 million to Cole, you're going to have to cut in places, and that's what they've done. They're not going over 210.
It's hard for me to understand as a Yankee fan who grew up with George Steinbrenner. And I know it's different now, but why is $210 million sacrosanct? I mean, I don't understand. The Yankees
well, you do. If you've listened to the show, you do understand because you lose draft position, you lose international signing money, and I think the least important part of it, Paul, is that you pay 50% on every dollar you go over the salary threshold. That's why. Why is it so hard to understand? They don't want to do it. And I'm going to tell you another thing. Nobody ever defends them, and whenever I defend the Steinbrenners, well, because you're the Yankee announcer, but I'll say exactly what I think, and you can think what you think. They lost to the Tampa Bay Rays last year, who had a $60 million payroll, and the Yankees had a $250 million payroll. You think at some point that Hal Steinbrenner probably got a little ticked off and say, well, why are they doing that and beating us with a $60 million payroll, and we're at $250? You know what? I want to get under the cap. I'm not going to pay tax. It's still going to be the highest payroll in baseball, but if a team with a $50 to $60 million payroll can beat us, you do a better job, and you get me a team that could win with $210. He's not being cheap. It's still the highest payroll in baseball.
And
what are you guys complaining about?
See, that's the thing that drives me crazy about Yankee fans. Well, we're the New York Yankees. How can we go in with this rotation? Well, what are you implying? Because you're the richest organization means the only way you can become good is if you spend money? I thought all the Yankee fans flipped out whenever it was suggested that they bought their championships. So what do you want? If they're that intelligent, which I believe that they are, then they shouldn't have a $300 million payroll to win. The Rays have proven that. A lot of teams have proven that. Take a look at the Giants' payroll when they won 3 championships in 6 years. So why do I have to spend $300 million? So you're suggesting, well, I'm a Yankee fan, they should spend more money than everybody else. Well, maybe it's time to start making prudent decisions. And I also hate when people go, well, I know it's different, but. No, that's the answer. It's different. George Steinbrenner's not here anymore. They're playing under a different set of rules than they were back in the day. So you can conveniently go, I know it's different, but. No, it's different. There is no but. It's different.
And also, when we had Hal Steinbrenner on after the Yankees lost against Tampa, I even said it. Do you get upset that Tampa Bay, with the $60 million payroll, beat you? Finished first in the division ahead of you. So your $250 million are being spent as well as their $50 or $60 million. If you're the owner, you don't think you'd get upset?
So
instead, you just want them to outspend the mistakes. Right.
So what you're saying to me as a Yankee fan is, when you say that we're the New York Yankees, that the only way they can win is if they outspend everybody
else. Right, they've got to get Bauer. They've got to go out and trade for Arenado. They've got to get a star in every single position. They have the highest payroll in baseball, and that's not enough for people. Well, they make the most money. Well, but they have the highest payroll of any of the 30 teams in baseball, and that's not enough to build a winning team? So once you sign Gerrit Cole for $36 million a year for 9 years, you are going to have to take chances on the rest of your rotation. You're not going to have three guys making $30 million a year as pitchers.
Right.
Why is it so hard to understand?
Well,
I don't understand. You do understand.
Because
you don't want
to
accept it, but you understand.
They became Yankee fans during a time where anything George wanted, he got.
But, by the way, it's not like they were always great during those times, because they weren't.
No, there was lean years.
However, I would just like to say, on behalf of everyone else who throws up in their mouth a little bit when they hear people go, we're the New York Yankees. We can't just go out there with Gerrit Cole and a bunch of semi-beat-up pitchers. Because the truth is, Don, you heard it about a money thing. I hear it about just this sense of entitlement / we're not just some baseball team. We're the New York Yankees.
No, I'm with you, but then he brought up the money. Why is 210 so sacrosanct? So he brought up the money. I'm with you. Sometimes they say, well, we're the New York Yankees because they're that highbrow, you know, family crest on the breast of their jacket kind of Yankee fan. But then there's the Yankee fans, and most of them that way. It's like, we're the Yankees. We should have a $300 million payroll. We should be able to buy every single player. Well, what does that say about your team that the only way they could possibly win is if they outspend everybody?
And they're supposed to, I said this when they lost to the Rays. They're the best-looking guy in the room. That doesn't mean they have to be a good conversationalist, too. They spend the most money. They should be able to put a world championship team on the field. They should. Now, one thing that I would agree with the fans about, I have no idea why teams are so dead set this year of getting under the salary threshold when the CBA, there might not be a salary threshold, and if it is, it's going to be a different number. The 210 is not even going to mean anything. Why this year is everybody so darn anxious to get under that? The Dodgers, the Red Sox, the Mets, the Yankees, they all want to get under 210, where 210 is not going to mean anything next year in the new CBA.
Unless it's just an excuse not to spend money during the pandemic.
And also, I think it comes down to this. It's been proven you could win without spending $250 million on players.
Well, I mean,
so if somebody else could do it and you think you have the smartest front office, go do it, Brian. Go do it. You don't have to have a $250 million payroll. I think that's what Hal is saying in his own way, too. And the draft capital is important. You don't want to lose draft positioning, and you don't want to lose the ability to sign in the foreign market. That affects you when you're over the threshold. It's not just money.
And I get the fan that's got to pay more money than most other fans do to see games and all that. I get that. But it's not like the Yankees haven't been entertaining. All right, they maybe haven't won a championship since 2009, but they're competitive every single year. So it's not like you're talking about a team that loses 100 games every year and is stealing money from you. You go to a Yankee game, you're getting entertained. You pop a Yankee game on, you're getting entertained. A lot of other franchises with high payrolls, their fan bases can't say that. Ask Peter about Baltimore all those years where they had like spending money and never won anything.
I mean, what would you feel? I mean, you're going to criticize teams that aren't spending or going after the players you want. What would you do if you were an Oriole fan? They're not even trying.
Right.
They are not trying. In fact, they're trying to lose.
You wonder, too, and this is a serious allegation, but why not? I'll throw it out. Makes you wonder why they became fans in the first place. right? Did you become a fan of the Yankees because you had a particularly favorite player, or you grew up in the Bronx, you grew up in the area, or did you just love the winning and you decided to root for them, and now this team that you invested so much in has won one championship in 20 years and you're disgusted? So if this team stunk in 1956, would that caller have been a fan of the Yankees?
I've got to get wonky here for a minute before we go to break. And
please,
I said
I love
this earlier.
Wonky.
Everybody that puts together a team now, they're into analytics. Analytically, the Yankees' projected WAR with this team, with so many rolls of the dice on it, projects to a 51.6 WAR. The Dodgers are 46.6 WAR. The Yankees have 5 more wins projected than the Dodgers, the world champions. So I guess it must be a pretty decent team, projected WAR.
Yeah. But unfortunately, you get to baseball, Michael, and this holds true. It's a crapshoot in the postseason. Because none of that stuff seems to matter once you hit the playoffs, right? Payroll
Absolutely.
Doesn't matter. WAR sometimes doesn't matter based on what you did in the regular season. It's just how you play on that particular week. That's what it is.
Let's take a quick timeout. I wonder what they'll feel if Kluber wins 20 games. And Tyone ends up winning 15 games with a 3-2 ERA. I wonder, would they give? They don't give Cashman credit for Voit. They don't give him credit for the trade getting Gleyber Torres. They don't give him credit for the third baseman. They don't give him credit for getting Clinton.
No,
no. You only get blame if you're a GM of a team.
Well,
they always point out the stuff that doesn't work out.
When the mission statement is a championship. You know, Tyone and Kluber can win, 40 games each. To get bounced in the first or second round, Michael, the fans aren't going to love it because they want to see a championship.
I'd love to announce a championship. I get it. But they're a really good team. You can make the argument of the best team in the American League, but that's not good enough.
Well, they want guarantees, Michael, because there was a time where it was pretty much guaranteed, right?
I've got a guarantee, Don. I've got a guarantee. We're all going to die. That's my guarantee.
Well, I mean, that's pretty morbid.
Yeah,
and
but that's a guarantee. There's no other guarantees.
But I think that – but listen, there weren't guarantees back in the day, but when the Yankees were winning 4 championships in 5 years, to them that was pretty much guaranteed. You knew that the Yankees were going to probably be going to the World Series and win. And when that fan – back in the 50s, you know what? It's a pretty good bet the Yankees are coming out of the American League. But guess what? You've got revenue sharing. The Padres are now players. The
Levels
Rays are now players. Now all of a sudden it's not a guarantee.
56,
now it's not as much fun, is it? Now we're getting to the root of it. Now when you don't win every year, it's not as much fun. That's why I wonder, would they have been like me, where I inherited a bad baseball team from my dad, the Mets in the late 70s, watching them lose 100 games a year? If that were the Yankees when that caller became a fan of 56, lose 100 games, would you have been a Yankee fan? Or are you just sniffing out the wins? Sniffing out the championships. Well, guess what? The Yankees are a class organization, but when it's all said and done, their chances of winning are just about as much as all the other teams in baseball.
No, it's better than some, but better than most. All the other good teams.
All the other good teams.
Right.
When they go to the playoffs, they've got just as much a chance to win as everybody else, okay? Now the playing field's a little bit more even, and Yankee fans don't like that, do they?
Now
all of a sudden they don't like that. Oh, it's a little bit more even now. Our chances aren't guaranteed now. Oh, no. What do I – I might root for a team, Peter, that's not going to win a championship. I might root for a team that doesn't win every year. I might root for a team, Peter, that won't win for a decade. What do I do? I became a fan of this team because they win all the time, and they betrayed me. They betrayed me because they don't win every year. How dare they? Frauds. Be a man and root for a garbage team and continue to root for them. And then when you win, you appreciate it. You don't appreciate it because it came easy. And now it's hard and you don't know what to do. Tough. That's called life. There's curveballs in life. Hit them. No, you take those pitches and you strike out. Swing.
Strike out looking. No, looking, Don.
It curved. How could I hit that when it curved?
All of a sudden life isn't easy anymore. Because you're all frauds, because if the Yankees were the Pirates in the 50s, you would have never been a fan of them. You're all frauds. All
I love it. This
so
is my
of our
Don.
Listeners are of the age that they, the Yankees were good when they started to win, when they started to realize. I mean, if you were born in 85, you know, you're 36 years old, you know, you're right in the wheelhouse in 96, 98, 99. Listen,
them,
that's
Michael.
Why I take pride in my Yankee fandom when I was a child. I started rooting for them when they were terrible.
And you loved them because that was your team.
Horace Clark and Jerry Kenney and Gene Michael and Roy White and Ron Woods and Bobby Mercer. Those were my teams.
Yeah.
They didn't expect to win anything. And I just happened to be there on the train when George Steinbrenner bought the team and reversed the fortunes of the organization. But when I started rooting for them, they were owned by CBS and they stunk.
But better yet, how about rooting for a team that starts out glorious and then all of your memorable life is garbage and you're still so into them that you can sell excitement about winning a division at 7-9. That's fanship. It's easy to root for a team that's being a Lakers fan over the last 30 years isn't hard.
I keep hearing it in the media, too, even some cotton. You know, Yankees haven't won a championship since 2009.
2009?
The Mets haven't won a championship since 1986.
That's right.
Hold on. This
Mets
is
fans have waited 35 years and they haven't won a championship.
Hold on. This is important. Don, you've heard me say this before, and this is true. Do you know that as passionately as I root for the Terps and a tough loss last night to Wisconsin, but I am still good when the Terp season ends and they invariably fail. I'm still good off the championship in 2002. I go, we just won. I just won a championship.
Only the Giants have won a championship more recently in New York than the Yankees have.
Yep.
Mets 86, Islanders 83, Rangers 94, Jets 68. So, tell your story, Walken.
Well, I'm getting yelled at by Andrew, so
go ahead.
Break. We went way over. The Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Andrew, get on the mic for a moment, though. Do you understand why we went over? I see Don starting to bubble over like he's about a teapot about to blow. You want me to go to break then?
Did I put up the sign to break then?
No, but
right.
You understand why
well,
he ignored the clock, because Don did.
And it's the same reason that I waited, because Don was giving us something good, then it ended, and now we got a break.
Wow. You just got shut down.
Wow. All right, you heard it, Andrew. We got a break on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, he certainly angered a lot of the fan base. And they get a chance to tee off on him. We'll just reset a couple of things. Deshaun Watson officially declared that he wanted to be traded to Texans officials. He hasn't said anything publicly yet, but it has been confirmed that he has demanded to be traded. And Adam Schefter and our very own Rich Samini say that the Jets are not number one on his list, despite what's been reported. Bear's upset about it.
Yeah, I hear you, Bear. No, I
get
it.
But they still have a chance. I don't say they're out of it, but two guys that we respect don't think that it's likely. I think Rich said they probably fourth on the list. And Adam Schefter, talking to Greeny, said, don't get your hopes up. We haven't even spoken about this yet. I don't know how much Don was not feeling that great yesterday. He probably slept through it. But the Nets went in overtime against the Hawks.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to tell you, in a close game, really, how are you beating the Nets? How are you stopping all three of them? How are you doing it? I mean, they're unstoppable. They are machine-like scorers. And I know they're going to have their problems with defense. I get it. But who are you stopping? Who are you doubling? All right, so you're probably doubling Durant. So that leaves Harden and Irving and
Harden?
No.
Durant?
No, the three-point shooter.
Joe Harris.
Sorry. It leaves him wide open. I mean, you can't double everybody. It's 5-on-5. You double somebody, all of a sudden, then it's 3-on-4. You got to pick your poison. The Nets are filthy, and they will work out their defensive stuff, and they'll get a big guy, and they'll get some guys with defensive principles. Because the guys that are great at scoring, they don't have to be that great defensively. I'm sorry, they don't have to be. If they score like this, they're machines. There was a play in the fourth quarter. Now, Yes has some highlights right now. I don't know if they're going to get to this, where Durant got the ball just to the right of like the foul line beyond the three-point circle. Guy came out to guard him. He took one step, dribbled, and then jammed the ball home. Sarah Kustak said on the broadcast, you can't stop that. This guy is unbelievable. He's one of the best players ever. This team is must watch. And I know they're not going to play defense. I don't know if they're going to win a championship, but they're going to be in the discussion. We have not seen in our lifetime many teams that have three talents of this level. So they beat the Hawks, who are a gritty little team on their own. They beat the Hawks in overtime. Durant had 32, Irving 26, Harden 31. So let's do the math. That's 63 and 26. That's 89 points from three guys.
Yeah,
pretty good. Pretty good. Mets trade Steven Matz. They get back three young players, including Sean Reed Foley, who has pretty good stuff from the Blue Jays. Masahiro Tanaka signs back with Rakuten. And I'm reading it could be like 2 years at like $7 million. So he didn't get that much money. Shows you the Yankees actually who love him. They obviously didn't want him back. And I'm sure that there's a team out there that would have given him more than that. And I guess to Masahiro, it was either the Yankees or Japan. And ended up going back to Japan because once the Yankees got Kluber and Tyone, you know, they didn't really have room for him.
Good for him, though. I mean, I guess it really was Yankees or bust.
And you know what it is, too, Peter? He's an absolute god in Japan.
Right.
So it's not like he's going back to some place where he's going to feel like, well, I was just on Broadway. The entire country is Broadway to him.
Yeah.
Well, and him and his family adopted New York, and New York adopted them. And this has been home now for the last 7 years. If they're going to go anywhere else, they're going home. He's not going to, go to Kansas City right now? It doesn't make sense.
No, but I wondered about the Mets. You know, would the Mets have rolled the dice on him? I heard that they sniffed around. I'm not sure.
Sniff him.
If they made him an offer. Let's go to the phones. 1-800-919-3776. Mike in North Jersey has something to say to Don. Mike?
Yes. How you doing, guys?
Good.
I listen to your show every day. But today, Don, you really upset me. There is no more loyal fans than the Yankee fans. I've been a fan since the early 60s. Okay, I've been in the late 60s when Horace Clark, Jerry Kenney, and Severino Sanchez was on the team. As far as being a man. Hello?
Yeah, we're here, pal.
You got it.
Okay, as far as being a man, I'm also a Jet and Knicks fan. So I am loyal. How about crybabies? The Mets fans are the biggest crybabies in the world. How the hell can you be objective about it? We know you hate the Yankees. You're not a Yankee fan. Keep your little zingers in every little chance you get.
But you guys, all you do is complain. That's all you do. All we take phone calls. Peter, correct me if I'm wrong. Do we not take phone calls every single day about Cashman's a bum, Boone's a bum,
Judge is a bum.
Judge is, because you don't win a championship and you freak out. Meanwhile, you got a team that's competitive every single year, and all you guys do is complain. And besides, as far as being loyal is concerned, take a look at all those videos of Don Mattingly hitting home runs in a completely empty upper deck.
That's a fact.
Was George Steinbrenner not threatening to move to New Jersey because nobody wanted to go to the Bronx because the team was losing? Then all of a sudden they started winning again, and there was no rumors about moving to New Jersey. So don't talk to me about being loyal. Michael will tell
I'm
you.
Yankee
Stadium was empty with the team.
There is loyal Yankee fans. Loyal Yankee fans.
You are a loyal Yankee fan, Mike. I will give you credit for that. You cannot tell me that every Yankee fan is loyal. You can't tell me there's a lot of bandwagon jumpers. You can't tell me that the same people that root for the Yankees are probably root for the Bulls and the Cowboys, and they get away with it because they're in New York, so nobody calls them a fraud.
Now, also one important thing here, Mike. He wasn't suggesting, neither was I, that there are no real true, you know, bleeding blue Yankees fans.
Not.
Of course there are. What we're saying is that there's a lot of complaining for a team that's so good and a lot of feeling that entitlement, frankly. And also, here's one bit of bad news, though. You cannot say your team is too good to say that you're the most loyal fan base in the world. You're not Cleveland Browns fans. You're not Buffalo Bills fans.
I'm worse than Cleveland Browns.
No. I mean, not you personally. Mike, this isn't all about you.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't say the Yankee fan base is the same as a base that's gone through getting nothing for 40 years.
Of course. But this, let me make the one point about the complaint, and then I'll hang up, guys.
Okay.
The thing that bothers some Yankee fans is the fact that Steinbrenner is being a little cheap lately. They're worth $5 billion.
You got the highest payroll in baseball, Mike.
Yep. Take some of the equity in your team and spend a little bit. I'm not talking about going crazy.
But you lost to a team that's got a $40 million payroll. Be better at baseball, Mike. How about that? How come every answer has to be outspend the issue?
How could you say he's cheap when he has the highest payroll in baseball?
That's where you can become a joke.
But you want Cohen. But how about Cohen? Everybody's saying Cohen's going to spend. Cohen's going to
spend. But he hasn't yet. The Yankees still have the highest payroll in baseball.
And, Mike, if you listen to me, if you're a loyal listener, you would know that I didn't all of a sudden get
Mike,
the highest payroll
in
baseball. What did I say, Michael, when Cohen bought
the highest payroll in baseball is not good enough to win, I don't know what to tell. Yeah. You can't blame Hal Steinbrenner.
They only need, Michael, in the playoffs last year, they had no – who was their starting pitching? They had no starters.
I know. And they had a $250 million payroll last year.
Right.
So the payroll doesn't mean anything. It's got to be dollars well spent. I don't understand the cheap. You keep saying a $5 billion organization. So the Dodgers. The Dodgers have less of a payroll than the Yankees.
And listen, Michael, what did I say when the Mets when Cohen bought the Mets? I'd have to wait and see because money doesn't solve anything. You got to be smart. You got to know baseball. You got to make the right decisions. It's not about having the most money. Because I saw teams like in Baltimore. The Dodgers have had the highest payroll forever. They won their first World Series since 1988 this year. All right? Money doesn't guarantee you anything. But it's that arrogance of we've got the most money, so we have to spend the most money. They are. So you're complaining that your team that spends $210 million a year isn't spending $300 million. You know how ridiculous you sound? And as far as Mets fans are complaining, all fans complain. But I don't have a reason to bitch and moan when my team hasn't won since 86.
Well, Joe Schmidt tweets, Adondres gives up on the Mets every summer, says he's checked out. He's a fraud for saying this.
When did I ever say that? There's times I check out as far as thinking this team's going to win. And I'm sorry if I don't watch every single game now. I got twins, all right? Guess what? I'm going to miss a few games from now on. But when I was a kid, Going to the newspaper and cutting out all the articles when Joe Torre was the manager to losing 100 games a year. Don't sit there and challenge my sports fandom. I certainly was no bandwagon jumper. And there are going to be people that are diehard Yankee fans. I'm friends with them. I know them. But you can't tell me in general this is a fan base that doesn't appreciate anything. They win 100 games a year. And am I wrong, Peter? Every day the phone calls, nothing but complaining about the team. You would think that they're the worst team in baseball.
Even when they're winning, no matter what the stage of the season is, they're complaining.
A couple of things. First of all, Torre ended up going on to the Yankees and winning 4 championships. I don't even remember that, Don. And the second thing.
What is that supposed to mean?
I just took a shot. Second thing is the reason why there's complaining, Don, I'll defend them right now, is because most of them grew up when George Steinbrenner was the owner. And the mission statement was championship or bust. You have not heard Hal say that. Obviously, he wants to win a championship every single year. But even the players didn't like that. If they didn't win a championship, it was considered a failure. But I call it the Steinbrennerization of a generation. You can't expect people to reprogram themselves. This is what they were brought up thinking. If they didn't win a championship, they failed. That's why when they haven't won one since 2009, they're not happy.
Well, grow up and pay attention to what's going on here. It's a different world. It's going to be very difficult to go out and win 4 championships in 5 years. And I defended the Yankees when people said they bought their championships. They had the core 4. They made great decisions. That's one of the reasons why they won as much as they did.
Let's go to
but
Garrett.
Now the fans think it's all about the money. They're wrong.
Garrett in New Jersey. Garrett?
Hey, guys. Hey, Wade. What's up, Mike?
How you doing, man?
Good. 2 weeks ago, I called up and called Don the hero. Well, you know what? You insult me, Don. You insult me.
Oh, no. Why?
Well, I'm 45. I've been a Yankee fan throughout the 80s. I don't remember 77 or 78, but I do remember the 80s, and we didn't win much. So
well,
I
wait one second, Garrett.
Very special.
Garrett, 1 second. I will let you make your point, but we got to spit some truth here. The Yankees won more games than any team in the 80s. They didn't win World Series, but in terms of victories, they won more games than any Major League Baseball team during the 80s.
No, I understand that, Mike. I understand that. But we're talking about championships here.
Okay.
Which I didn't get to see until 96. So 96 is very special. And 98, as far as I know, that's the best Yankee team I've ever seen. So I hold all those championships very special. I, unlike a lot of Yankee fans, I appreciate the pitchers they have just picked up because of the money that they're saving. I remember they picked up Scott Brosius off the scrap heap, and he ended up an MVP in the World Series.
So, Gary, so let me ask you something. Let me ask you something.
Yes, sir.
When you hear me talk, and you know I'm not talking about you because you are a diehard fan and you understand what's going on, why did you take it personally when I'm talking about the fans that complain about them not spending money? You just admitted you like the fact that they saved some money. So why would you take it personal when I'm clearly talking about the fans that complain and moan and groan about the money all the time and don't take satisfaction in the fact that they are a competitive team every single year? You obviously are not that guy. I'm sorry, I can't talk to everybody individually. It's a broad stroke that I took. But you can't tell me that a lot of Yankee fans don't fit the description that I gave.
No, I have to admit that. But
that's why you shouldn't take it personally, because it doesn't sound like you're one of those fans.
Yeah, it's tough, Don. But you know what? You're the hero again. I love you.
Well, I understand that we're going to get phone calls from people thinking that I was at a personal attack on them. Obviously, not everyone falls in that category. But a lot of Yankee fans, maybe the majority of Yankee fans, are the ones that think they're entitled to some sort of championship because they root for the Yankees. You're not entitled. You got to go out there and win it just like everybody else does. And if you think you can buy your way out of it, is that really what you want to do? Is that what you really want to be known for?
I think this is a really good team they put together.
Well, but it's not good enough. Because
we don't know that.
Call.
We'll know that in October.
Has anybody called,
Michael, this is a really good
team? Say this is a really good team? Or do they call to complain? They actually got DJ LeMahieu back. Nobody called to praise it, but the second he would have left, they would have crucified the team. And they brought him back. And you think they're a good team. You think they're the best team in the American League. And I agree with you. But does the fan base react like they're the best team in the American League? Or they act like that they're run by a bunch of buffoons who don't know what they're doing? That's what frustrates me as a Met fan. I wish I had a team as well run as the Yankees. I wish I had a team that won as much as the Yankees do. And you guys it just feels like don't appreciate what you have.
That's right.
Let's go to Jeff in Connecticut. Jeff.
Hey, how are you today?
Good, how are you?
Good. I had a point on Steve Cohen that I wanted to expand on a little bit. I work
sure.
in quantities, but first on Don, I get where Don's coming from, but real quick, family of four to sit in the second level at Yankee Stadium on a Sunday when this is pre-pandemic, and I've been doing it for 20 years, and I grew up with Mattingly, and I saw the 80s, and I saw the 90s. You're spending $500, and then by the time the food's out and the parking's done, you're spending $700. That's four seats, second level. You're not sitting downstairs. You're sitting in the second level overlooking. So I think some of where the Yankee fans come from on the salary cap or whatever the 210 number is, yeah, there shouldn't have been a long negotiation with DJ, and we don't want to feel like we're nickel and dime when it comes to making
but
the
Jeff,
better team.
But, Jeff, the long negotiation with DJ, they got the deal they wanted. They should just give him what he wants. It took too long
agree.
To get him.
No, I 100% agree, but I do think that there was a 3 or 4 week period there where – you know, during the holidays that some Yankee fans are nervous that they might have lost.
At no point when I was talking to people in the know did they ever think that they were going to lose DJ LeMahieu. They knew exactly what they were doing.
Okay. So my second point on Cohen today is I've been in commodities for 15 years, and my take on his second tweet, not last night's tweet, but it's his second tweet today, was a billionaire elitist mocking the peasants that lost money with Robin Hood today.
What was the tweet?
And
give me just
that went trading is hard, isn't it? Question mark. Did you see the comments
yes.
underneath that tweet?
Yeah.
Now that to me it opens up a dangerous path. Mm-hmm. When you have a guy that paid $2 billion in SEC fines over a deal where he probably should have landed in jail. And now we're gonna go at a time where people the little guy has a chance to make Wall Street look terrible for a week, and hedge funds might go down left and right that deservedly were on the wrong side of this, and he's going to come out and mock people that actually got it right, while he supported, he and another firm called Citadel were involved in helping a hedge fund basically get bailed out of this whole thing. So to me, this is a situation where he needs to get way, way, way off Twitter, because if people actually did their homework on what he said today, it would open up a whole other ball of wax.
See, since you're in the business, and somebody tweeted me, people knew who Steve Cohen was before he bought the Mets, but Jeff, he kept a very low profile. He did not use his money for fame or to be in the limelight. You didn't ever see Steve Cohen. He didn't even want his picture taken. He would buy the rights to anybody that took his picture. Now all of a sudden he's making comments like that on Twitter. That can't be good for him.
No, I agree. And I don't know. I never knew about Mr. Madoff either until I realized what was happening. I'm not saying that Steve Cohen is in that same class, but I agree with you. 100% low profile. But that's what drives people crazy, is when that type of mentality, that's why I think, and I listened to Peter's point on Portnoy today, and I understand where Portnoy gets his following from, but Portnoy had every little investor that was sitting in their home loving this GameStop move because they did the research. They figured out that people were too short this equity, and they bought it, and they kept buying it, and they kept buying it, and they were making money. And then for Robinhood to come around and say, guess what, today you can no longer buy it. We're going to let the big guys, the bigger guys, sit in a corner and figure out how we're going to stop this.
What made Robinhood do that?
Citadel owns a huge, I think they own 40% of Robinhood.
Well, there you go.
And Citadel was literally just sitting with Cohen helping a hedge fund, get out of this mess, because they were obviously short GameStop.
And from what I know, the hedge fund that was in trouble was a guy that had worked for Cohen, 0.72, right?
0.72, yeah. Exactly. So, I don't know, guys. This is a very, very difficult time in everyone's lives, and I know Twitter is such a dangerous space to begin with. The fact that that didn't get more attention, I feel like it was just like him sitting at home going, the big guys just figured this thing out by all. Yeah.
It's a great point by you. And first of all, I know nothing about this, but I know one thing. This was what happened over the last couple of days was really just sort of an insight to the way America works. It's rigged against regular people, and people who are already incredibly rich wield all the power. This just got completely shoved down our throat today. And to the caller's point, dangerous territory for Steve Cohen to weigh in, regardless of how he feels, regardless of how rational he even was in the exchange with Portnoy. Because of the position he's sitting in, if he's not incredibly careful with his word choice, he could really alienate people.
Let's take a brief time out. This portion of the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit 2 by London at the Americana, Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. It's Michael K., Don LaGreca, and Peter Rosenberg, and you're watching us on YES and listening on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.